is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. And it's been quite a good week for news of varying kinds. And I'm sure many of my listeners will be aware that this particular week was the one during which certain people received channeled messages that indicated there would be a flyover of a kind, which I believe was to occur in the evening time, because that was the manner in which they referred to it. And it would coincide with the whole of America and Canada being not necessarily blacked out, but a partial dimming of the lights. And apparently it was expected that half of America would be affected at the time. There are only a couple of days left for this event to happen. And I don't know what the latest news is, but as you will hear from some of the other messages I have, it hasn't so far been supported by some of the other sites, which I would tend to feel are reliable. Anyway, I'll start off with one that does refer to it, and that is Sheldon Neidel's message for the Spiritual Hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. And he's saying that they need to keep their fleet at the ready and fully deployed to carry out an immediate mass landing scenario. Now, I hasten to add that I don't think the fleets that he is referring to are those concerned with the suggested flyover. And you'll see why a little bit later in the message. But nevertheless, they are talking about being fully prepared for a mass landing. And it's interesting that some time ago, in fact quite some years, they were talking of that possibility. And then there came a period when they said they wouldn't do a mass landing. But now apparently the whole outlook has changed. They say they also require their Earth allies to commit only to those items on any given agenda that they are actually able to fulfill in a diligent and truly orderly fashion. And they say, finally, we need to make sure a mass landing can in fact be likely in the very near future. These items are at the very top of our list of priorities. We expect the intensity of these desires to bear fruit in the form of a swift finale to this mission. That's great. Very positive talking there. The message goes on to say that, talking of themselves, this is the ETs, that they are diverse in both sentient species and in variety of craft. And they go on to say that many of you believe that we can arbitrarily decide to stage a mass landing. But this is sadly not the case. Too many complex variables need absolutely to be accounted for before such an action can be carried out. And they also say that, moreover, we do not intend to make an early small-scale landing in a spot that we would announce in advance. Those who put this about are merely spreading silly lies and spurious disinformation. Now, I have to say, that can only connect with the earlier message that I referred to, which spoke of the flyover and the dimming of the light as a signal that it would take place. And I would say it's very unusual for these type of sources to speak so firmly and openly about other people's messages. So if indeed that comment is worthy, I have to say it does put the predictions of this flyover really on the burner, so to say, until there is an appropriate time. And if you aren't already aware, the reference to talking of an early small-scale landing in a spot that they would announce in advance actually refers to the area mentioned, which was Salt Lake City. Anyway, the contacts for that particular group if it fails to materialise, will no doubt give some reason as to why that should have occurred. To get back to Sheldon's message, they say, as of this date, first contact is to be effected strictly according to the plan drawn up by the three groups mentioned above. It is to be a massively staged occasion done in concert with our Earth allies and under the ever-watchful supervision of heaven. They're talking there of the Earth allies, the Ascended Masters, and the Galactic Federation. Those are the three. And the message says that having set this straight, let us move on to what is now bearing on this case. We recently received a formal decree from Lord Surya in Heaven's Great Throne. It gives us a dispensation to land and complete first contact. I think that's possibly a confirmation of something that came through earlier. It seems to me that the divine decree had already been given. And if you haven't previously read all of the messages from Sheldon Nidal, you might not be aware that Lord Surya and his lady, Lady Soraya, are apparently the gods for this particular universe. Saying it in the sense that you have the supreme creator, and then for each universe you have what you might call a principal god. So that information is also very reassuring, and we know that when the time is appropriate that they will come, and that is without fail. They're talking of their mission conferences that they have, and they said that they have devised a number of options. The foremost being to pressure, and they say, our partners, and to use this dispensation to land in the very near future. This has yielded some positive result. They go on to say that divine orders and councils of heaven have asked the ascended masters to clear the way for them to land on what they term as our most alluring shores. And they say that this pressure puts some on our Earth allies, which is immense, and forced the quickening of their timetable. So it's nice to know that they appear to be working to some sort of date here, and they're trying to speed things up. They say, even so, their swifter action still leaves us basically in the same spot. We remain optimistic and sincerely expect this to be the year for effecting first contact. There you are, confirmation again. They go on to say that meetings are now being held on your world, holding the promise for the finishing of preliminaries. And the prerequisites for regime change are being addressed as never before. Previously, prohibitive factors are beginning to crumble, and we are close to a final resolution. This resolution has not yet evolved to the point of tying down a date. This aspect is still fluid, but we are trying to create conditions wherein all parties can agree to a firm date. I go on to say that accordingly it is the wise opinion of the majority of our Earth allies to remove this illegally elected regime with all possible speed. Allegiance to this cause increases daily, and we fully anticipate a regime change to happen in this year. Indeed it must, for the other parts to fall into place. They say, as for the time for a truly momentous event draws nigh, we closely monitor your world and watch out for situations that can greatly endanger your global society. They go on to talk about the melting of the polar ice caps, and they say that this signals that the great cycle of change is underway all across the planet, and that the global warming created by humanity's negativity aids that cycle, and that the growing danger is a selling point for speeding up the arrival of their fleets upon our shores. The message moves on to talk about Mother Earth and how her interest has to be included in these programs. They talk about the overarching concern is how to legally remove the American regime from power. And they say, talking about a regime change, that we intend to guide them to fully unify their efforts and forge a timetable for completion. All things considered, ousting this present administration from power is swiftly becoming the linchpin for first contact. They're talking of having initiated a project that they call Project Omega. Apparently, that is to cover all of the activity which will lead to what has now become generally known as first contact. I will conclude my comments on Sheldon's message by referring to some of their final comments, saying that their network has dispatched personnel and the necessary technology to rapidly make first contact feasible. So there you are. And I think that's all very, very positive. And no matter what else happens, it is something you can always fall back on and feel certain about the outcome. Now, Matthew has sent out a message which actually started out yesterday, which I very conveniently received a copy of today. And he had said, following a fairly recent one, that he would be making another around about this time. So it's very good to see it. As usual, there's a whole stack of information here, which I've run off. And I have something like 8 pages of information. So I can't possibly do justice to it all. But on the other hand, it's very difficult to leave some of it out. So I'll start off by giving the good news. And I haven't seen this come through any other source at this stage. But he has said that indictments against President Bush and some of his cabinet and other principals in his administration were served, and that this is a most significant step in what has been a long process of researching and organizing irrefutable evidence to justify this legal means of removing these people from their positions. Well, I mean, that's got to be the news of the year so far, because Patrick Fitzgerald seemed to be going along very well, and I guess we half expected this announcement to come through him. But it's excellent to know that the indictments have been served. He goes on to say, talking of President Bush, etc., that they will make every effort to avoid prosecution, so please do not expect immediate results, but be encouraged by knowing that the energy momentum during the preparation period was given a gigantic leap forward by the document's delivery. He goes on to say, have you wondered why, in the face of world opinion growing ever more vocal against the war in Iraq and internal turmoil in that country expanding in large part because of US occupation, this administration isn't withdrawing its military force there? And he says, Bush needs this volatile situation to continue so he can justify what he claims are his rights as a wartime president. And many of those upheavals in Iraq are instigated by the Illuminati-controlled CIA members to support his contention. He says, but just like his time left in office, that situation also will see its end much sooner than appears possible in this moment. Other lawsuits have been and are being filed to show this administration's complicity in the terrorist event 9/11, waging war without facts to support the declared need for it, the illegalities of holding prisoners without charge or legal defense, and unauthorized surveillance of citizens, sanctioned torture, deliberate lack of efforts for survivors of hurricanes, and legislated erosion of constitutional rights. Boy, that's some list, isn't it? He goes on to say that the amassed energy racing toward this justice is unstoppable. So whatever happens, it will come. He says, I have mentioned in previous messages that some people in influential positions who formerly were participants in the dark agenda have left and eagerly joined with the light worker force on the planet. That again is very encouraging, and it's showing that the light is, as we might say, creeping in everywhere, and people are awakening to it. I think that's wonderful. Matthew talks of the Illuminati again, saying, nevertheless, sufficient Illuminati power remains in your major media so that the news is focused on topics that generate fearful emotions. He goes on to talk about the saber rattling against Iran and North Korea, and saying that Earth has declared that she will not abide the Third World War and its devastation to her souls in any life form. So please do not aid the dark ones by fueling their desperate need for your fearful feelings. He goes on to say that Earth is moving at an accelerated tempo into the plane of vibrations she has chosen. But each of you must choose your course. If you are filled with fear, you will block the light from lifting you spiritually and also changing you at cellular level so that you can travel physically with Earth. He says, each time a person succumbs to avian flu, it is widely reported to keep alive your concerns that the relentless warnings of a potential endemic may be right. And what now that the vaccines have been found worthless? Interesting question put there, because I don't know where the reports have come from, except to say that we did have a professional person in England who, over the last few weeks, stated that they have some power to curtail the problem, but they aren't actually a cure. So there we are. He goes on to say, please be aware of how purposefully these kinds of news events are selected, and do not let your emotions be pulled into the fear that is intended. He's talking about the arrival of the fleet of ET ships, and he's saying here, I'd like to continue with another matter of great importance. The many questions you have received about a channeled message stating that a widespread power failure will announce the arrival of the fleet of ET ships, and Salt Lake City has been designated as one landing site. He says this is supposed to happen in a few days, and that Hatton and himself have agreed that because this is his area of activity and not Matthew's, he will reply to questions of this nature. And he did so. And he said, you read the first report that was sent you. And if you don't quite understand that, he's talking about the message that followed his own one on the previous message that Matthew sent forth. And he's saying today, in paraphrasing his response, I say that there will be no landings until there is assured safety, both for the space family visitors and all people in the area, and that time has not come. Nothing that could evoke fear, such as a massive power failure, will herald the public arrival of any ETs. He goes on to comment that first contact is a misnomer, because small ships regularly land and take off from any areas. Of course, we are aware of that, but it has become the name for that whole project. And it's something that people understand when you talk about it. He also says that many ETs are living amongst us, however innocently intended by the people who pass this message around. The effect of this information is a rise in excited anticipation. which will be followed by the much lower energy vibration of disappointment, disillusionment, confusion, and possibly to many the discrediting of all channeled information. I was saying it is vital that you learn discernment in evaluating all information from all sources, including channels, yes indeed. Matthew was asked a question about chemtrails, and he said, chemtrails are solutions with toxic ingredients, including biological agents and minute particles of metals and chemicals that are dangerous to your bodies. And they are intended by the Dark Ones with authority to order these flights and their deadly payloads to cause illness and death. And he says, I see that one questioning reader asks why the people behind the chemtrails would do this unless they had antidotes to the toxins. And his reply was that the peak of darkness on the planet is exactly in that space because they lack the capacity to love themselves or others. And their hunger for achieving their goals contains an arrogance that they are indomitable and their target masses are expendable. They do not order the aerial contaminants released over areas where they, their families, or other primary Illuminati parties reside or are visiting. And if ones who are serving them happen to fall victim to the toxins, they are replaced. They also have products which they do not wish to be known publicly, that protect against or ameliorate the harmful effects of the toxins. And he says that on a lighter note, the most dangerous effects of the chemtrails are being greatly reduced by the technology of the extraterrestrial civilizations that are helping you and Earth in numerous ways. Without their continuous neutralization or alleviation assistance in this regard, most bodies would be irreparably damaged and die. As it is, though, you who have strong immune systems may become sick, but you will survive. Those whose immune systems have been severely weakened by illness, nutritional deficiencies, or long-time stress very likely cannot. He goes on to talk about some of the things that you can do to enhance your immune system, and he talks of replacing your regular salt with sea salt, cutting down on sugary foods and cutting out foods with artificial sweeteners, drinking a lot of the purest water available. And instead of buying chemical drugs produced by pharmaceutical companies, discussing with pharmacists at health food stores the best natural remedies and nutritional supplements for your personal needs. He makes the point that ultimately it is your responsibility to care for your body with the same conscientiousness that you care for yourself in mind and spirit. He goes on to again respond to a question about what is going to happen to those people with diseased or paralyzed or missing limbs when we reach the fourth density. And the answer is extremely interesting because he says that it is not within your pragmatic view of third density solids to recognize your bodies as energy vibrating at different frequencies. Yet that is what they and everything else in universal existence are. The frequencies in lighter planes will enable the cells of bodies currently afflicted with the noted conditions to be reorganized, regenerated, or rejuvenated so that fullness of form and health is restored in individuals whose soul contracts call for this. If the contracts call for physical death prior to Earth reaching the higher plane, it is by those souls' choice. Within these two categories of possibilities, I can add traumatized psyches caused by whatever experiencing the individuals endured. In most cases, the healings or growth of new limbs will not be instantaneous, but rather a self-initiated process aided by therapists trained in the techniques used by advanced civilizations. He's then asked to comment about AIDS and the future of people with that particular disease, and I'll sort of condense the answer here because it's rather long. He's basically saying that AIDS is a laboratory designed disease, and that with this particular one, there was no provision for extraterrestrial intervention, as was done with the SARS virus and also the present avian flu virus, to prevent its intended mutation into a contagion situation for mankind. And he's saying that many souls aware of AIDS devastating course chose to experience it as a concentrated karmic lesson that would complete their third density learning and permit evolution to the fourth. And he said, always a cure is developed along with these man-made diseases. And he also talks of the people that are going to be affected by AIDS as having established a pre-birth agreement. And this is how they come to be drawn into this particular disease. And he says, yes, AIDS has affected millions who did not sign up for this experiencing. And like the many thousands who perish in man-made floods or earthquakes, prior to completing their agreement for provisions, they are given full karmic credit so that they can evolve to their next highest station for spiritual growth. He says, still another factor in this disease's prevalence is the light generated by the outpouring of compassion, financial contributions to research and direct aid, the medical teams who care for AIDS patients, and the caretakers of the children who are orphaned, many with the disease themselves. He says, your world is still affected by polarity with darkness and light in opposition, but the dark influence in all areas is rapidly diminishing as the light continually increases in its intensity. His mother, who passes on the questions, asked about full karmic credit. And Matthew said, it is like a sunburst emerging from behind a cloud and beaming through a window in the mind. It is a bestowing of knowledge of universal truth to the extent that the person's consciousness is able to grasp. In these instances of divine grace, the discoveries of universal truth come swiftly instead of over however many lifetimes the soul might have required to get it. He was talking in the sense that he had made a reference to that in the earlier part of the message. Now, there were a number of other questions that Matthew responded to, but what I would like to do is now come straight in at the end where Matthew has said that he's going to hurriedly close by saying that your, and he's talking of all of us collectively here, that your soul chose to be the you that you consciously know, because with full knowledge of this momentous time in the universe, it knew that your uniqueness is needed to assist Earth in her ascension. With the divine love of the universe and reminding you of the host of light beings at your side, this is Matthew in loving farewell. Great. Sheldon's and Matthew's message are really so upbeat and very encouraging. I'm going to come on quickly now to my own messages for the last week. I'm trying not to spend too much on each one, but there are some pertinent points that seem to come out when I reread them. And last Saturday I had Saint Germain through, and he was saying that everything is being set for the final outcome, confirming that the dark will fail, and he was saying help is given as soon as you turn to the light. And he said this is the year when the dark will finally give way to the light and they shall be removed. Talking of us, he says, you will become the teachers of the future and serve others as you have been through this cycle. On Tuesday, I had one of my Galactic Federation friends called Atmos, and he was talking about the intensity of light and saying that as it increases, so people everywhere are beginning to feel the changes taking effect. Even those that are engrossed in their third-dimensional lives. And talking of ascension, he said, at present you have a foot in both worlds. He did comment about the Middle East situation and says that many of the problems cannot be fully addressed until first contact face faith. And he's saying that they see not just events and people, but also they are aware of the consciousness and the intentions of those who lead our country. He says we will neutralize and disarm nuclear weapons and that their use will no longer be allowed. He says that the Galactic Federation has protected her from being taken over by the beings. And I understand that to be a direct reference to possibly hundreds, if not thousands of years when negative extraterrestrials have had an eye, I think, on our resources as much as anything. I say finally from that particular message that he said, you are coming of age and will stand tall amongst us who are your true family. On the Wednesday I had another Galactic Federation friend, Salusar, and he said that the last cabal are playing into their hands by insisting on proceeding with their plan and talking about justice being seen to take place. He says there is a higher tribunal that is already set up to handle such grave crimes against humanity. He said you must learn the truth about yourselves and understand the final preparations necessary to take you through ascension. He's saying that as your vibrations increase, you'll reach a point where you'll be at ease, both within and without, and look forward to a new feeling of oneness and harmony. And he says, whatever happens, it will not affect the greater plans for mankind. Talking of Mother Earth, he says that she is anxious to carry out her cleansing, and the sooner we can come, the quicker we can lessen the effects of it upon you, where the greater danger threatens. We will move people out of those areas as it becomes necessary. And he concluded it by saying God has decreed the outcome for this sector of the universe. On the Thursday, I had Elar, who's my one Arcturian, and he was confirming that their role is more in a teaching capacity and that Orthodox teachings on Earth have limitations, as they were for another era. And he was mentioning that even pagan truths have been brought into religious teaching. And it is time for growth. And we have to apply ourselves to a new understanding and open to other ideas. And he does refer to channeling along with that. And he's saying it is in a message that is important. And he tells us that we must take the first step. And the first principle is love. And you have to be able to give unconditional love. He says, the time is now to make your decision. Now I come to today's message, which was from Saint Germain. And he is talking about the possible outcome of the Middle East crisis and saying that this will determine the outworking of future events. And that the Middle East as a total area of upheaval should be visualized and covered in healing rays. He talks about preparations for ascension, proceeding according to plan, and he reminds us that we are one race, and soon peace shall bring us closer together. Where am I now? Yes, I think I actually missed Monday's message, which was also from Saint Germain. I seem to have got my little notes out of order here, so I will mention it before I finalise. And he was saying that in defence of your country, it is not a true war in the Middle East, but it is contrived to allow a greater foothold in that particular area. Seems to be all I noted from that particular one. Last Saturday I had my one lady ET, Diane, and she was talking about UFO sightings and contacts and teachings and said that we have a lot to learn about them, and in fact they are no longer strangers to us, and that we have, that is us, many guides, mainly due to the ETs coming to Earth, and people from the higher realms. But she was also referring to an earlier period upon Earth when ETs came to Earth and presented themselves as gods. And she comments that these were the vengeful gods. But other beings also came in those periods of time, and they talked of the gods of love. I mean, she says we are to rise up and join them, and they will help us find the truth, and also the masters will walk with us and talk with us, and that we should clear our minds and know that we have been ruled by fear in the past and not by love. So I think that covers all of my own messages, so I can now get on to what I call my UFO spot. I've found one indication that sightings still go on. Obviously they must do, but we don't seem to see many reports of the current ones these days, at least I don't. And there was an email sent around a few days ago from Nancy Tate, who is another member, another channeler on my website. And she says that at 9:30 in the evening, before going to bed, she looked up at the full moon high in the sky. And to her amazement, there was a huge cloud ring completely round the moon. And she said she had to turn her head a bit to see it, but it was all so wide. And she said that she asked Hatton what it was, and he told her that it indeed was a ship. And she said, we could see the moon even although the ship was between it and us, because the ship was in another dimension. And she said the cloud ring was a residue of the energy molecules that were formed from the interaction of that dimension with ours. And she said, this is why you're able to see the clouds rather than the actual ships, which are close. It too is a way in which the ETs can make themselves known to us and for us who have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. And she says inwardly, that is. Hatton said it was a patrol ship, seven times the size of a regular scout ship, and that they were monitoring the relevancy of magnetics and frequency of the moon and Earth. And this full moon was the time to do it for a strong reading. It was found that the magnetic strength had reversed in that the moon was holding the source of the magnetic draw rather than the Earth. And she said, or he said, this means that Earth and her life have accelerated their frequency to the point where the magnetics could no longer hold the base it had on Earth, and that in order to keep the relevancy of Earth to moon, the moon had to assume the magnetics. He also said that this represented a beginning of the return to the antimatter state for Earth, and that this is very significant, for when all is returned to the antimatter state, it means that we ascend. I find that quite interesting, because I've never actually heard that given as one of the features of ascension. So that's something new that I've learned. Now, as usual, I've gone back on my old flying saucer reviews, and in 1966, they issued what we might call a special edition covering all types of contacts with ETs. So what I've done is made an extract from that booklet, and this actually covers UK sightings. There weren't too many listed in there, but they were talking of one at a place called Granton, which is near Shrewsbury, and this took place in 1954, and Mrs. Jenny Rosenberg was involved, and she said that at 4:45 p.m. on that particular day, she and her two children watched this shaped object of aluminium colour as it hovered over their house, and she said through the two transparent panic, she claimed she could see two men with white skin, long hair to their shoulders, and very high foreheads. So so that all their features seemed to be in the lower half of their faces. They were wearing transparent helmets and turquoise blue clothing like ski suits. And she said the object hovered at a tilted angle while the two occupants surveyed the scene. She said sternly, not in her unkindly fashion, but almost sadly, compassionately. So that's interesting. That gives one visions of what George Anansky quoted when he had the contact with his museum. So the description sounds very much like them. There's another one that I have extracted, which took place at a place called Aston, which is in Birmingham. And it concerned Mrs. Appleton. This was in 1957. And she went upstairs into a sitting room at the back of the house to check that all was well with the baby daughter. And suddenly she sensed an oppressiveness. She said, like that preceding a thunderstorm, and then saw the figure of a man by the fireplace to her left. She said the image appeared after the fashion of a TV picture, first blurred and then clear, and that this materialization, as she called it, was accompanied by a whistling noise. And she was very frightened, but suddenly realized that she was being calmed by the man's influence on her mind. She said that the man was tall and fair, with a tight-fitting garment, made of a substance like a plastic raincoat, and the collar rose up behind the head, she said like an Elizabethan collar, and his lips moved as in speech, but Mrs. Appleton heard nothing. She then realized that questions which were racing through her mind were being answered mentally, and she claimed that she learned that he was from another world and that he was looking for a substance which she thought sounded like titanium, but which her metal worker husband later suggested might be titanium, and she agreed with him that that was the name. The visitor also conveyed to her by some process involving his hand a picture of a saucer-type craft, with a transparent dome and also a larger master craft, and he indicated that he came from a world of peace and harmony. And at the end of the contact, the man left in such a way that suddenly he wasn't there anymore, is the expression she used. And some newspaper pages that had been on the floor where he stood were found to be slightly scorched. Apparently, in 1958, Mrs. Appleton had a second contact, and this time two figures appeared to her in the same way. And on that occasion, they spoke to her in what she described as a foreign-sounding language. She said one had long hair to the shoulders, and the second, and she said seemingly the senior partner, had shorter hair curled over his ears. And Mrs. Appleton was informed that they only appeared to her because her brain was suitably fitted for such contact. And she was told that she was witnessing a projection of the entities and that she should not touch them. That also is an interesting point there, because quite often ETs have made that comment about themselves and particularly their craft, and it would seem that there is something in their radiation or their energy that might be harmful to us or possibly even to them. Now, there was another case in Aberdeen, which is Scotland, and there were some young part-time soldiers of the Territorial Army, and they were at a place called Deeside, which is not far from Balmoral. And that was in 1958, and in the course of their manoeuvres, two of them were left to guard a small hilltop, fully equipped, and they had dug themselves a slit trench for cover. And they said that in the small hours of the morning, just as the first cold light was showing in the east, they heard a strange gurgling noise from behind trees a few hundred yards from their position. And then, as they went out to investigate, two huge figures emerged from the shadows and came towards them. And the youngsters stopped in their tracks, horrified, for the creatures were more than 7 feet tall. The gurgling sound was, they presumed, one of the creatures conversing one with the other, in an unrecognisable tongue. As far as they could see, the creatures were dressed in a peculiar garb, which seemed seriously to impede their gait, and overcome with terror, the two lads turned and fled, and as they ran, they heard a swishing noise, and glancing over their shoulders, they saw a huge, brightly shining, dish-shaped object coming down the road behind them, only a foot or so above the surface of the track, and it swooped over their heads and away, pulsating as it went, and they said, trailing a shower of sparks. Now, I will move on from my UFO section to general news. And it is a week during which there are remembrances of the death of Martin Luther King Jr., who was shot on the 4th of April, 1968. And there was an article that came up, which was written by Ted Welburn quite some good time ago, because apparently he passed away in 2002. But this very small article came up because they were saying that Martin Luther King was not shot by James Earl Ray. And they showed you a number of photographs and diagrams to illustrate that the witnesses to it were pointing at an entirely different location from where James Earl Ray was alleged to have been. So that's just a little thing, but I thought it was worth mentioning. I saw an email circulating yesterday, and this related to the Foreign Office paper that reveals British knowledge of the CIA torture flights. And this came from the Citizens for Legitimate Government. This was only yesterday. And they were talking of the unease in Britain regarding the government's decision to get on the front foot over its role in the CIA's so-called rendition campaign. And this was laid bare by this leaked Foreign Office briefing paper, which dates back apparently to the disclosure last September to the extent of British support for the operation. And an investigation by the Guardian paper had shown that the CIA's aircraft had flown in and out of Britain at least 210 times after the attacks of 9/11. And as usual, the people at number 10 Downing Street apparently tried to cover it up because the leaked memo reveals strategy to deny knowledge of detention centres, and the government is apparently secretly trying to stifle attempts by MPs to find out what it knows about CIA torture flights, and privately admits that people captured by British forces could have been sent illegally to interrogation centres, and they say there is a hidden strategy aimed at suppressing a debate about rendition. So there we are. It's come to a head in this country. And I just hope that the MPs or the media won't let that one slip without being answered. There was another report talking about Bush being on trial in New York this weekend. I haven't actually got a source for that one, but I'll tell you what it roughly covers. It's saying, is the Bush administration guilty of war crimes and crimes against humanity? And they're referring to this question because they're saying that even raising the question has been ruled out of order and out of bounds in the US today being the 17th of January. And they're saying that on the 20th to the 22nd of the month in New York City, an unprecedented Citizens Commission of Inquiry will ask and seek to answer exactly these questions and alter the terms of the debate about this government. So there we are, there's a little thing happening there. Some people standing up for their rights by the sound of it. There was another extract that I made from a report, and I omitted to give credit to where it came from, so I must apologise about that. But it's talking about former Vice President Al Gore, who gave a major speech in Washington accusing Bush of repeatedly and persistently breaking the law by authorizing the NSA wiretaps. And Gore called for Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the abuses. Gore said Bush's illegal spying program is threatened. And to quote, he said, the very structure of our government. And apparently, you can go to today's breaking news to find the entire speech. Republican Senator Arlen Specter, the head of the Judiciary Committee, had admitted that impeachment is a possibility if Bush broke the law. And this extract finally talks about comment by Walter Cronkite on Iraq. And in the news, this TV newscaster has become the latest advocate for US withdrawal from Iraq. So somebody else who's throwing their weight behind the calls for an end to the war. ABC apparently had a scoop, and this has gone on to video, and they're talking about millions of Americans' phone calls tapped by the NSA. And apparently, within the last week, they aired a terrifying scoop on Nightline, and a former senior insider at the National Security Agency said that the agency has illegally spied on millions of Americans who make telephone calls overseas. And their excellent Brian Ross reported about that. So there's something else that's coming to light. I only mention these things just to show you what is happening. There's a lot of attention being given to bringing the truth out, and that is what we expect in these coming end times. I have another extract talking about the National Security Agency, and they're saying that there are information graphs that resemble spider webs linking one suspect's phone number to hundreds or even thousands more, and that the number of Americans subject to eavesdropping by the NSA could be in the millions if the full range of secret NSA programs is used. And the same, that would mean for most Americans, if they conducted or, you know, placed an overseas communication, more than likely they were sucked into that vacuum. I have another extract, and this came about a week ago. And it was talking about the deteriorating international crisis over Iran, and saying that it is a direct result of Bush's administration's ham-handed and mendacious Iraq policy. And they're saying that under normal circumstances, that is, under any previous US administration, the battle over Iran's pugnacious effort in pursuit of nuclear technology would be amenable to a diplomatic solution. But by insisting on a national security strategy of preemptive war, by legally and unilaterally invading Iraq on false pretenses, and by hinting that the White House would tolerate an Israeli strike on Iran's nuclear plant, President Bush and Vice President Cheney have made a successful diplomatic resolution of the Iran crisis nearly impossible. Well, that's a fair comment there, I think. I have another one which relates to comments by Al Gore, and this comes from a judge we call Flash, and this refers to the Constitution Hall at Washington. And apparently, a congressman Barr said that he shared the concern that Americans' Constitution is in grave danger, and that American values we hold most dear have been placed at serious risk by unprecedented claims of the administration to a truly breathtaking expansion of executive power. And he said, As we began this new year, the executive branch of our government has been caught eavesdropping on huge numbers of American citizens and has brazenly declared that it has the unilateral right to continue without regard to the established law enacted by Congress to prevent such abuses. And it is imperative that respect for the rule of law be restored. There you are. So there are people who are picking up on these actions and trying to get something done about them. I'll finish up my program by finishing the rest of my general news items, which means, unfortunately, that I haven't had time, alas, to refer to the other messages that come from various sources of channeling. That's partly due to the fact that we've had Matthew's message tonight, which for good reason takes up a reasonable bit of time. So what I will endeavour to do in next week's programme is to make sure I allocate more time for the other messages, which contain some wonderful information and sentiments. I'm looking now at a report that came from Laurie Sullivan of Tech Web News. And he's talking about the Department of Homeland Security, which will begin testing passports embedded with radio frequency identification technology. And this is going to take place at the San Francisco International Airport mid-January, so the agency said. And he's saying that in October last, the US State Department issued final regulations on passports issued after October 2006, stating that all would have embedded RFID chips that carry the holder's personal data and digital photo. And he's saying all this increased security isn't cheap, and that the technology budget for the US visit program adds up to more than $1 billion in the past three fiscal years, ending October 1st. DHS is waiting for official word on the 2006 budget, but Hinken said funds have been approved and expects final funding in January. And this report concludes that there are more trials underway and that RFID chips have been embedded in 194 forms. People who frequently cross US borders to work, for example, are required to carry these forms, and tests at five border crossings will continue through spring 2006, and a formal evaluation on the project is scheduled by March. The department will then make a decision on whether to continue the program. So that's it for this particular program. I hope you've enjoyed some of the material that I have selected, and I hope you will be with me again next week. Thank you, and God bless you.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.